And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Radio Free Asgard. This is episode number 199, and we're coming to you, as we always do, from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harris. Welcome along to the show. We are a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network, and we also are available on a bunch of different places, including iTunes, Stitcher, and the aggregator of your choice. And if you have any aggregators you want us to join, because they're, you know, it's the one you prefer, then let us know, and we'll try to get us on there. I think we're on most of the major ones already, but, you know, you never know. Before we get started with the episode properly, I just had to shout out the two newest members of the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. First, we have Dario Gonzalez. Welcome along, Dario. And Maurice Gray, who's an old acquaintance of mine from Fort Myers, Florida, though neither one of us lives there now. Knew him way back in the hinterlands of the 80s. Yeah, way a long time ago. So welcome along, both of you, and hope you enjoy the show. So, episode number 199, that means next week is episode 200, yeah, and we do have something coming up, something, you know, a little bit different for a change. First of all, we're going to be talking about Avengers 2, and I just wanted to alert people to that fact, because I would love to hear feedback from other people on the Avengers 2, and if you have anything to say about that, please feel free to do so. I've already posted an announcement over on the Facebook page last week. So if you haven't contributed yet and you wanted to, then please feel free to. You can either email us at radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You could also join us on the Facebook group and you can give us your opinion there. And anything we receive is going to be read out on the air. And of course, if you're interested maybe in being on the show, want to send in some kind of recording or whatever talking about Avengers 2 and your opinion of it, please feel free to do so. And I think that between our Avengers 2 discussion and a couple other little special stories that I'm going to be covering, I think we're going to be a very full episode. So hopefully it will be a big deal. And I'm hoping for some other surprises as well. All right, so we really don't have a lot to talk about other than that. I mean, hey, you know, it's summer and a lot of people are just out of school and having time to waste. And what better way of wasting time than to read comics? And of course, we're going to be reading a comic this week, that being Iron Man number 22. And so, without any further ado, let's move along to our review.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
And Iron Man, all jets ablaze, he's fighting and smiting with repulsor rays. Amazing armor,
there's Iron Man,
a blazing bomber.
And this week we are looking at Iron Man number 22, cover price $1.99. Cover date, November 1999. Cover art is by Sean Chen. Shows Thor and Iron Man, and they are fighting together against somebody with sharp claws on their hands and somebody with a skull-like face with sort of fishy ears. And, the dynamic cover here of Iron Man shooting repulsor rays, and Thor is shooting lightning out of his hammer. Oh, and there's some sort of a watery woman kind of hidden by the logo here. It's kind of bad planning as far as the cover art goes. And we open up to Saturday morning cartoon art from Disney Channel. And then to the splash page where we have Iron Man, the Eighth Day, Part 2 of 4, The Thrill of the Chase. Kurt Busiek and Roger Stern were the writers. Sean Chen was the penciler. We have a team of inkers here. They must have had a deadline issue. Hunter, Morales, Nelson, and Cannon were the inkers. Steve Olif was the colorist. Comic Crafts, Troy Pateri was the letterer. Bobby Chase was the editor. And Bob Harris is the editor-in-chief. And we pick up right where we left off last episode and last issue for you Iron Man fans out there of Inferno, who is the mystical hero created by the mystical fire brazier thing. And we get a little bit of a recap here. This is where it all began. 200 feet beneath the icy tundra of Canada's Nunavut Territory, at the lost temple of Baal Thak, Tony Stark had been hired to help find a way into the temple, but no one was prepared for the fiery goddess who came blasting out. And we have Inferno in the background, and she's shooting down purple, I guess, fiery rays. And in the foreground, we have Mr. Little and these kind of Kirby-ish characters that we had, supporting characters from last issue. As Count Zorba or Zorva, whatever his name, and Princess, whatever her wadoodle. And then Java Man. And we cut to the inside of the temple where Iron Man has been knocked down, but he's not out. And he says, "The Fire Lady had blasted me when I entered the temple. If she could knock out Iron Man, the archaeologists and treasure hunters outside wouldn't stand a chance." And he's recovering, and we cut to Inferno, and she's got purple Kirby Crackle coming out of her joints. I think I told you she had that like Kirby Crackle joints. "Away, vermin! You shall not befoul the temple with your presence. Balthak's power is not meant for the likes of you. That power belongs to Inferno, and Inferno alone." And Iron Man comes up behind her, flies up, grabs her, and like a half Nelson, carries her out of the temple. And he says, "Sorry, Inferno. You may have won the first round, but the fight's not over yet. What do you say we take this outside?" And they go flying up into the cold. Remember, she doesn't like the cold. This is the pilot from last issue that got transformed. And she manages to push Iron Man back, and kind of blast back with energy. "Unhand me! I shall not tolerate such familiarity from a mere mortal. How dare you bring me up here in the cold? I hate the cold." "You're supposed to get used to the cold, but I never have." And Iron Man realizes now that this is the pilot of the aircraft. And he's like, speaks the obvious, because, you know, Marvel characters do that.
You're the pilot that brought Stark here, Samantha McGee."
And she seems very confused by that, but she's like, "Yes, no, I was, not anymore." And he's trying to talk sense into her while trying to wrestle her.
"Listen to me, Sam. Something in that temple did this to you. You have to fight it."
"Fight it? Are you mad?" He's like, "Sam." And she's like, "Don't call me that." And she's pumping Iron Man full of energy here, which I would think would make him stronger. Actually, it says here in the caption, "I felt myself grow stronger as my armor converted her raw energy discharge into power. I could have held on forever if the flow had held steady, but it didn't. Instead, it built an intensity, doubling and redoubling." And there's a giant zocked, and Iron Man's circuit breakers go pop, and he goes crashing to the ground with a ho-woomph into the snow. And he's like, "Man." And at that point, Inferno's gone. And he's heading off towards New York City or wherever her friends are. And as she's leaving, he's like, "Bedlam and Conquest have awakened. The eighth day approaches."
"I don't like the sound of that,"
says Iron Man. And so Iron Man is heading back to New York, apparently, and we have him flying through the air. And he's on the phone, I guess you could say, with Jarvis at Avengers Mansion. And he's telling the story here.
"And by the time my systems rebooted, she was long gone. It's been almost an hour, and I've had no luck in picking up her trail. Given her power levels, I felt it critical to warn the Avengers, Jarvis. Who knows where she'll turn up next?"
"Where indeed, sir. There is certainly cause for concern. The local news has been reporting a battle between Master Thor and the Juggernaut. Their contest was apparently interrupted by two strange beings, calling themselves Bedlam and Conquest."
And we see a flash on the television here in Avengers Mansion of Juggernaut fighting Thor and these two strange beings that showed up. And I should mention, this isn't the computer Jarvis like from Avengers 2. This is the real Jarvis.
"They reportedly spirited the Juggernaut away before Master Thor could help them."
"Jarvis, alert any Avengers you can. We may be in for a serious fight." "I'll be in touch. Iron Man out."
"Acknowledged, sir. My word, something is brewing indeed."
And we then shift scenes to platform number 5, 15 kilometers off Tahiti's north coast. And a giant building here, like an artificial island. and the Stark Fujikawa logo here on the top. And apparently this is a base erected by Stark Fujikawa to study subsea geothermal power sources. In other words, volcanoes under the sea. And we have a visiting dignitary who is a Mr. Hachiman. So I don't know why his family name is the same as the Japanese monkey god, but hey, maybe he'll turn into a giant monkey god. There's a crew of people that are meeting him in the helicopter. Welcome. Did your flight go well? I am here. That is all that matters, he said. And the worker's like, cold fish, ain't he? Brother, that's the hatchet man. He's got ice water in his veins. When he shows up, somebody's going to get fired. Maybe you, maybe me, maybe all of us. And we notice the Mr. Hachiman, he seems to be going into almost a tremor or a convulsion. But he doesn't fall down. He's being drawn to the edge of the floating island thing. And they're like, Mr. Hachiman, is something wrong? And he's like, the call. And he jumps overboard into the ocean. And they're like, no, man overboard. And we see Mr. Hachiman is diving deep into the ocean. And down and doesn't have a wetsuit or anything. So, yeah, this is not good for his health. He's swimming downward through the ocean. And there's a temple down there, similar to the temples that we've seen so far. And he's like, the call. I hear the call, he's thinking to himself. And the captions say, before him lies the temple of Valtor. It has awaited the arrival of one such as he for millennia. Yoshi's lungs burn, but he ignores the pain, swimming as one with the temple's inhabitants. Toward a glowing emerald vial which floats, waiting in the heart of the temple. Must have it, he's thinking. Must answer the call. And he grabs this floating green vial, and he glows all green and shit, and apparently has transformed, but we don't get to find out what into yet, because we have to shift scenes here. And we're back to Iron Man flying across ice. And I don't know where he's going. Oh, I guess he's heading his way back to the temple.
Having no luck of my own, so I'm heading back to check things out of the temple. How are things in Seattle, Pep? Has there been any word from Carol Danvers?
And this is in reference to that alcoholic story last issue. And obviously he's speaking to Pepper Potts.
No, but you did get a call from Rumiko Fujikawa. She said it wasn't urgent. Will you be back soon, boss? Stark Solutions is swamped. We have job offers from Biosystems Limited, Pacific Alloys, General Tektronics. We could use 3 Tony Starks.
And Tony's like,
Pap, contact Bill Foster. See if he can subcontract the Biosystems job out to him. Maybe refer General Tektronics to Scott Lang. And Pacific Alloys, they want a metallurgical consultant. See if Myron McLean has any time in his schedule.
And she's like, yes, sir. And so Iron Man goes back to the temple, apparently, and it says he ditches the armor. And he shows up on the temple doorway on a snowmobile, and this whole gang was, you know, here, the archaeologists, the Count and the Princess and Mr. Little and all that. And Little's like,
Stark, where the devil have you been?
Sorry, I had to run some data for Iron Man. Everyone all right?
Well, Iron Man saved us from that inferno woman, eh? But Mrs. McGee is still missing.
And that's obviously Java Man. And basically Stark fills him in on what Iron Man told him, quote-unquote, about Inferno's identity and other threats. And Java's like,
the Juggernaut, you say? He's believed to have a connection to Korea's Temple of Sidorak. The carvings there, and here, warn of something called the Sign of the Eight. Any mention of an eighth day? Asks Stark.
What is this all about? Says the princess.
I'm not sure. Princess Zanda, isn't it? From what Iron Man told me, you and Count Zorba here showed a less than healthy interest in this place.
Yes, you cannot trust them, says Mr. Little.
No more than I trust you, Mr. Little. The whole world may be in deadly danger, so you're going to tell me everything you know about this temple, or temples. And that goes for all of you.
Xanda looks over at Zorba, and she's like,
He is right, Andreas. We must.
And we then shift scenes back to the coast of Tahiti, where we find a bunch of workers from the thing. They're all dead and mummified.
And yeah, so that all happened off camera. And we see a silhouette here that looks like it's full of little energy dots or something. I'm not sure what they're affected or going for here. And a voice saying, "So they die, as must all that is mortal, at the touch of decay." And we see the fishy-eared guy from the cover, and it's obviously Hachiman. He's been transformed by the temple, the green thing. And he's like this gruesome, decayed-looking dude. He's got a skull-looking face, but not quite. And he's got the fishy ears, like I said. And he's wearing like mummy rags, and they're kind of falling off of him like they're rotting because, you know, he's decayed.
"The call has gone forth. How only a few are left to be chosen."
And we shift scenes to the rainforests of Northern Australia. International Game Warden Nicolette Giraud is on the trail of illegal trappers when she hears the silent call emanating from the depths of a cave. And she goes wandering into the cave.
"Who's there? What do you wish of me?"
And it says here, the words catch in her throat as Nicolette finds herself within the lost temple of Watum.
Oh!
She sees this sort of waterfall thing, kind of like a pillar with a waterfall in front of it. And so there's water coming down. And it says, the call beckons like a whisper from the glistening waterfall. And she goes towards it and says,
"Yes, I am here. We are one."
And she goes wandering in, and there's a bunch of like silver sparkling in the air going on. And we cut back to Stark and company, and they're in the Count's airship. Remember the airship that crashed last issue? And Stark is thinking to himself, "I don't believe this. We're already over the equator, going several times the speed of sound. I'd love to know how Zorba came by this craft." And Princess speaking here,
"My sources say that our associate, Colonel Nigel Pigman, has uncovered another temple in the Andes."
"That pompous aristocrat trying to outdo me, is he?"
"I know Pigman better than he knows himself. He won't elude me."
The Java man is just talking to Stark here.
"These people have been associates for years, eh? But they don't seem to trust one another at all."
And Stark kind of agrees with him here. And then we get interrupted by this giant ad here for something involving Spider-Man and race car driver thing. And yeah, it's very silly, so we're not going to talk about it. And we then have the airship within minutes descending into an Andean valley, surprising scores of workers who scurry around the newly excavated temple. And the five of them pour out of the airship, and Zorba's like,
"You men, get away from there!"
And Java Man is like,
"Good lordy, they bored a hole into it. Who would allow such a thing?"
"Who else?" says Mr. Little.
"Pigman, still looting the past, are we?"
"Zorba, what the devil are you doing here? Xander, Little, you too. I didn't expect..."
"I'll bet you didn't."
"Did you think you could keep this fine to yourself?"
"Hold it," says Stark. "First, let's make sure there's nothing dangerous lurking in here."
"What? Egad, you're Anthony Stark. When did you join the Council?"
"I'm not one of your antiquarians, Colonel. I was hired to help Dr. Mann here at a similar dig in the Arctic."
"Amazing, eh? These carvings evoke the legendary Ferala."
"Look, this building is a potential source of danger. We must seal it off."
"Is that really necessary? At least let me scan the carvings, eh? Wait a minute, there's..."
And then there's this bright flash of light, and we see the four of them, the princess, Mr. Little, Stark, and the Pigman, from the looks of it, are enveloped in light. And suddenly Kalibak comes leaping out from the darkness. I mean, he looks just like Kalibak. I mean, it's a little bit too on the nose for it to be completely coincidental. And he comes jumping out. He's like this hippie hair, and he's got a goatee, and he's got the claw-y hands like we saw on the cover, and a somewhat Kirby-y sort of outfit. He's going, "Hurrargh!" And the princess recognizes him and says,
"Zorba, once but no more. Now I am carnivore, and you are all my prey."
And he leaps at them with his claws drawn, and everyone's running. It's like, "No!"
and he's swiping at him. He's like, yes, run, ha, ha, ha. And he slashes at Stark, and he kind of rips his backpack up with a rip, and then just runs past him. And Stark is thinking to himself, he's ignoring me. Did he think that swipe left me helpless? It probably would have, if not for what was inside my backpack. And turns out it's Iron Man's armor. It's all in its compact form, and he is getting ready to put his armor on. And we see Mr. Little is running away, but he trips, and you know he's sure to get ripped up by the carnivore. And Java's like, Mr. Little. And carnivore's like, loyalty, how touching. And he's going to rip him up, but he gets blasted by some kind of ray gun with a Zrakt. And it turns out to be the princess. He's like, keep away. You must have taken leave of your senses if you thought me unprepared. And the pig man is like, man, little, this way. Hurry before he gathers his wits. Well done, princess, says carnivore. I thought you might provide me a bit of sport before you die. And all of a sudden he's grabbed by Iron Man from behind, kind of a half Nelson kind of thing.
Death notices are a bit premature, Zorba. Don't just stand there, you four. Go!
And carnivore just flips Iron Man like a judo flip over his back. He leaps at him with his claws out.
Fool! With those lights, you are easy to find in the dark.
With that mouth, so are you.
And he takes his repulsor ray, smashes carnivore back with a shoom. And we cut to the four who are running away, but they're not heading towards the entrance at this point. And the princess is like,
this isn't the way out. We must turn around.
No, wait. These runes, eh? This is all starting to make sense.
And he's scanning the runes. Java's scanning the runes with some kind of device.
What the bloody devil are you talking about? Says Pigman.
Yes, Java. What is it?
I'd already compiled and cross-referenced scans of the Arctic site with photos of the glyphs from the Korean Temple of Sidorak, and I've been adding new scans here on the run, as it were. I'm finding the story I'm finding is mythic in scope, eh?
And we cut back to the fight of Carnivore and Iron Man is using his holographic confuser thing to create multiple Iron Man, and it's like, he's like,
hold it.
Do you think to trick me so easily? No mere illusions can fool my senses. Now run, Iron Man, run!
And so I guess it's a cross between Kalibak and Timberwolf from DC. So Iron Man is like, don't have much choice if I'm to keep him away from the others. So he starts leading him on a merry chase, I guess. And we then shift back to the group, and we're hearing the story here of these gods who created these temples.
Many ago, there was a gathering of 8 great mystical entities, eh? Ferala, Sitorak, Balthak, Icon, Ragador, Watum, Valtor, and Kraken. And there arose a disagreement over whose power was greatest. To settle the matter, they entered into the wager of the Octessens, eh? Each created a totem, and each totem held a fraction of its creator's vast power, and would transform the first human who touched it into an exemplar, a living embodiment of that power.
And we cut back to Iron Man momentarily. He's still fighting McFightenstein here with the carnivore.
Playing mouse to his cat is just wasting my power reserves. I have to turn the tables on carnivore, find some way to subdue him, and that won't be easy.
And he's hiding behind a wall, but carnivore just kind of rips through the wall with his claws. And he's like, "Arr! No prey can long hide from carnivore." And he tackles him down to the ground. And we're getting more of the story in the meantime from the archaeologist here.
The entities all used outside agencies to build temples to host their totems. Legend has it the Sidorak tricked an order of monks into building his.
Yes, yes. But what do these exemplars have to do with the wager?
Once a mortal became an exemplar, a spell would be triggered, eh? Drawing others to the temples, creating 8 in all. Juggernaut was likely the first.
The Juggernaut? But he's been around for years. Why didn't he trigger this sooner?
I'm not sure, eh? Perhaps the spell was somehow interrupted.
And we have Iron Man, he's kind of smashing through the wall here, carrying the carnivore with him out in the daylight. And he's thinking to himself,
daylight, good. I need a good solar charge to stop this maniac.
All right, carnivore, no more beating around the bush. If you want a fight, you've got one. But the chase ends here.
You deny me the thrill of the chase. Very well, then I shall slay you.
And all of a sudden we hear Halt coming from behind. And we have the two new characters here. We have this decay character and the mummy guy who we saw earlier. And a watery woman who's kind of cloudy and watery. Yeah, she looks very watery. We'll put it that way.
We must go, brother.
Decay is right. We have more urgent matters.
No, I will not be denied this kill.
And the three of them are just kind of standing there.
I must kill my prey. Very well. Just do it quickly.
And all of a sudden we hear a kraboom and somebody shouting, I say thee nay. And it's, of course, Thor. And he comes smashing down and he's like,
know ye demons that you face not one Avenger, but two. So swears Thor, God of Thunder.
See, I told you Thor would be in this issue.
We have no time for this. You claim control of the storm, Asgardian, but all of nature is at the commands of the Tempest.
So she's a Shakespeare play now, huh?
By my power shall the earth now swallow you whole.
And so she opens up the earth and Iron Man and Thor fall down in and it seals shut behind. And the three of them, the watery woman, and I guess it's waters and clouds, I guess. I don't know. And the carnivore and decay are going off and flying away.
Come, brothers, the eighth day dawns.
That kill should have been mine.
You'll all have the killing you want after the Octessens. Yes, we all shall.
And they go flying away, and then we see Iron Man and Thor kind of busting their way up out of the ground, and, you know, pretty easily, apparently, and they come smashing up.
Our foes, says Thor.
Gone, without a trace. Not even a heat trail. Thanks, by the way. How did you find me?
Satellite telemetry, tracking your Avengers communicard.
And Java comes running out of the temple.
Iron Man and Thor, eh? Thank heavens you're here. I can't find Mr. Stark.
The boss has already been evac'd, Doc.
And we then cut to the inside of the temple, and Java's telling them the story of, you know, the runes and all that stuff, and Thor's like,
then the Juggernaut is also one of these exemplars.
Yes, with Inferno, Carnivore, Bedlam, Conquest, Decay, and Tempest. That leaves just one still unaccounted for, eh? Preventing that last transformation may be our only hope.
How so, Doc?
Well, according to the runes, once the last of the exemplars is empowered, they shall come together in the ceremony of the Octessens and create a great mystic engine, which shall overwhelm the will of humanity. Once free will is destroyed, each exemplar will take control of 1/8 of the planet and its population. And then...
Yes?
Then there'll be war, eh? Until none but one last exemplar remains standing.
And that is Iron Man number 22. The eighth day continues in Peter Parker's Spider-Man number 11. And of course, we do have a few things to say about this issue. And we'll be saying it right after this.
Hey, kids. Do you like comics?
Uh-huh.
Do you like Iron Man comics?
Uh-huh.
Do you want to learn more about Iron Man's downward spiral from alcoholism, fear of commitment, and feelings of inferiority, leading the egomaniac into a life of misery?
What?
Then listen to the Invincible Iron Cast Classics Edition and see Tony Stark go from genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist to genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist with awesome weaponized armor. Relive classic stories like Demon in a Bottle, Armor Wars, Doom Quest, and more, hosted by me, Mike Staley. So how about it, kids? Do you want to listen to the Invincible Iron Cast?
Uh-huh.
Well, too bad. You need to do your homework.
Aww.
The Invincible Iron Cast Classics Edition, on iTunes or at invincibleironcast.podbean.com.
And we're back. Now, you know, to be fair, Mike, I mean, once a kid's done his homework, he can listen, right? So Mike does an Iron Man podcast, as you just heard. So just go ahead and listen to him. He's over on Podbean and iTunes and everything else.
Anyway, so, yeah, a few things about this. Again, you know, it's a decent continuation. I mean, this has so far been very, very formulaic. Obviously, we cover this because Thor's in the story, but Thor's not really in this issue all that much. He just comes in over the last few pages. Again, the plot is pretty predictable. It's pretty much a retelling of each issue before it so far, and obviously we're building up to something, but right now we're still gathering together our cast, as it were, the octessence, and it'll of course carry on from there. Artwork by Sean Chen. I'd never heard of this guy before these issues, and I think the guy definitely is somebody who has a future ahead of him. I really like the way he draws, and he has a nice clean line style. I could see a lot of influence by people like Kevin Maguire. He spends a lot of time trying to do convincing facial expressions. The consistency is really good. I mean, I know I've complained about that in the past to some other new artists that, you know, they can't seem to get things straight and draw them consistently. But this guy's really good at that, and everybody is very consistent from panel to panel. He doesn't make these Kirby characters look as much like Kirby characters as they did. He's drawing them in his own style, and that's okay. You know, but I like the guy's style, and I, you know, would like to think that the guy's still out there working, because obviously, at least with this issue, is showing a lot of promise, and I really kind of like it. Use of Thor, well, you know, he doesn't really do a lot, but I have a feeling that's going to change next issue, so we'll find out. All right, so next time, Radio Free Asgard number 200. So we're not going to be covering the Peter Parker issue next time. That will be, of course, in 201. We do have something, kind of special. We're going to be talking about Avengers 2, and we're going to be talking about a couple of other little random stories that are of interest. And anyway, hopefully that'll be fun, and I'm kind of looking forward to getting that big extravaganza out of the way and back to the regular grind again. And with that, I am back into my limousine, back heading towards Stark International with my armor in its protective suitcase, going back to being the billionaire playboy philanthropist that I am. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me. Musical selections from Eden, The Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.